why? Because really what I want to know is I want to know the laws so that if I sign up with y'all, I'll know what I'm supposed to do so that I won't be out of line, and then everything will be good. I just need to know the law. I just need to know what you believe. Just tell me enough so that I know that I'm not doing anything that's going to be illegal. Just like driving a car. Because if you walk in and you look at somebody and they say, well, what do you believe? Well, I believe we're supposed to do everything God puts on our heart. Well, I'd run them off right off. I'd lose more people that way. Huh? Well, that's too broad. That's too... I just believe you're supposed to do everything that Jesus lays on your heart. Everything we read in that book that God convicts us of, we're supposed to change in our life. Huh? No, I just need the 14 things. Just those 10 things y'all put up on the wall. You know, the board. And I got those 10. Now I don't have to worry about the rest. It's not part of the list. It's not a law. And if it creeps into the church, let me say it very carefully and very sincerely, we will fail. It's why the church in America today is failing. It's why we're losing generation after generation, because we live by the laws. We do exactly what we're supposed to do, not doing anything wrong. Because it would have been wrong to not go to church today. That's the reason you're here. I mean, it's Sunday, you're supposed to go to church. But anything above that, now that's getting into itchy kind of places in my life, Brother Lott, and I have to think about that. I have to pray about that. May have to fast about that. And I know I'm not ready for that. Well, I want to talk about a king today. And this king is, I know he gets a lot of bad rep. And in fact, the Bible makes it clear there was no king that did more damage than King Ahab. But King Ahab was not just some bad person. When you read the stories of Ahab, he was just a king. His problem is that he wanted to do just what he was supposed to do and never totally go beyond that in his life, his morality, or any other part of his life. He wanted to be able to have the best of both worlds. He wanted to be able to not serve God, not really commit to God, but at the same time get the blessings of God. If you don't believe that, one of the greatest scenarios is when it's not rained for 3.5 years because the prophet has told the king Ahab, he says, you're just a bad king. You're doing bad stuff and God's not going to let it rain. Ahab finally meets the prophet 3.5 years later, no rain, everything's drying up. The first thing he says to the prophet is, you're the one that's been causing all the problem. I just told you 3.5 years ago why it was not going to rain. And the first thing you come up with out of your mouth is, I'm the problem. That's Ahab. Why can't I do what I want to do when I want to do it? Why can't I say what I want to say and act the way I want to act and live the way I want to live and still get the good stuff from God? He's not against God. He's just not for God. He's not doing anything right. He just doesn't want to do anything, quote, wrong. And he thinks in his life, if I live this way, then my life will be good. And the 20th chapter of 1 Kings is a beautiful story of the whole life of Ahab. And I want to share it with you. Verses 32 and 34 give us our main footnotes. So they girded sackcloth on their loins and put ropes on their heads and came to the king of Israel and said, thy servant Ben-Hadad, look at the person beside you and say, thy servant Ben-Hadad said, I pray thee, let me live. And he said, is he yet alive? He's my brother. Now the men did diligently observe whether anything could come from him and did hastily catch it. He caught, in other words, they caught the fact that Ahab said,
he's my brother. They caught that. They're very shrewd lawyers. And notice, and they said, thy brother, Benadad. Then he said, go ye, bring him. Then Benadad came forth to him, and he caused him to come up into his chariot. And Benadad said unto him, the cities which my father took from thy father, I will restore. And thou shalt make streets for thee in Damascus, as my father made in Samaria. The word streets there literally just means, he says, you can set up markets. You can do your business there. You can sell to my people. In other words, he's opened the commerce. He said, look, you can sell all your goods. You can sell all the books and stuff you want. I ain't no charge. We ain't going to charge you any tax, no nothing. You got free street rights. You can set up any street booths you want to. Then said Benadad, I will send thee away with this covenant. So he made a covenant or a treaty with him and sent him away. Let me catch you up on the story here. Benadad, in the opening part of this chapter, has accumulated 32 other kings. Benadad is a king, and he has collected 32 other kings, mostly Armenians, and they have decided that they're going to wipe Israel off the map. What a friend. They have gathered all this army, a massive, enormous army, and they've come and besieged Israel. King Ahab is in a bad situation. He realizes his numbers are, he can't fight them. He can barely muster 7,000 troops if he decided to. Very small army. So he sends papers to Benadad and says, what is it you want? Benadad sends papers back and says, I want your best looking wives. I want your smartest, good looking kids. In fact, I want whatever I want. I'm going to send my people in there, and whatever I find that I want, you're going to give it to me. All the gold that I like, you're going to give it to me. That's my ultimatum. Ahab is a shrewd king. Remember now, Ahab's a good king as far as kings go. And he says, whatever you want. He realizes, I can't defeat this guy. And if I can let him come in and kind of steal some stuff and get some stuff, and maybe that'll appease Benadad. And he tells Benadad through a letter, whatever I have is yours. Benadad sends another letter and says, I think you're holding out on me. And I'm going to send some specific auditors and some real good lookers, and some people that can find stuff that I think you're hiding from me, and I'm going to have them come in and search all that you have. When Ahab gets this letter, his heart's disturbed because he realizes Benadad is not just wanting to come and get his stuff. Benadad is not just trying to come and get some gold. Benadad is looking for a fight. And he's just wanting Ahab to do one wrong thing. If he was to find one gold-plated pot somewhere in Ahab's office, and he would say, see, you're hiding stuff from me. We're going to kill all of you. He's just looking for a reason. And Ahab's wise enough to realize, okay, this is not a payment problem. He's coming to do one thing, and that's to wipe me off the map. He talks to his council. His council tells him, look, Send letters and tell him you we're not playing this game. We may die. We're going down fighting. So he does. I love this part because Benadad and his kings and others are having a drunken party. They're already celebrating and they hadn't even fought yet. They're already claiming victory and already excited. And this letter comes in right in the middle of their party. And you can hear King Benadad read it out loud. I want to hear what that little king has to say about us. He's expecting some letter that, whatever you want, whatever I can do. And he writes a letter and says simply this. He says, I wouldn't do too much boasting if I was you. It's not good to boast when you're taking your armor off, when you haven't even never put it on. Oh, that did not go over good at the supper. That did not go over well at all. And Ben-Hadad decides, I'm going to call my armies and we are going to wipe them out. Ahab has no resort now. He has nothing else to do. He's got to fight, but he doesn't know how to fight. He doesn't know how to win this battle. And when you know God walks in through a prophet, and one of the prophets come to him and says, Ahab, here's what God wants you to do. He wants you to take your elect guard, the 232 elect guard that you have. These are the best of the best, what we call our Green Beret or whatever you want to call them, the Royal Guard. And I want you to put them out in front. Now, they're usually there to protect Ahab. They're usually there for the last resort. They're there to make sure that if everything else fails and you send the army out, if the army gets beaten, then they only can fall back to that guard. That guard is the most trained, the most secure fighters that they have. And he said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to send them out front. And Ahab says, well, what about me? I want you out there with them. You're going to be right out there with them. And then the 7,000 that you got will come up behind. God says, I will deliver you. When they started the fight, the Armenians looked down and counted how many they had. They got 233. Well, then send 233 of our best. The Bible says that man for man, they killed every single one of them. Not one Israeli soldier died. But every Armenian on that battlefield that day, all 233 came down the hill and all 233 hit the ground. It scared their army so bad that they took off running. Isn't that amazing how God knows how to do things? They take off running, leaving Ben-Hadad just running for his life. Now, it's not bad enough that you get beat. But the Armenians decided when they finally got themselves regrouped, they said, look, let's put the army back together. Here's why they beat us. They beat us because their God is the God of the hills. That we can't fight them in the hills. We get on them rocks and them hills and they whoop us every time. But if we ever get them in a valley, ours is the God of the valley. That's a story in itself. I ain't got time to preach that one. And so they decided, let's get on this hill. We'll make sure Israel's on the other hill and we'll meet them in the valley. And so they did. Ahab is scared because he knows, all right, we got no shot at this. The Bible describes how they covered the hill. They covered the mountain with people. Ahab had like 7,000 people sitting up on one little corner of it. But God came and said, Ahab, I'm going to give you this battle. I want you to kill Ben-Hadad. I want you to wipe them out. I don't want you to leave nothing. I'm going to give you this battle, and here's why I'm going to do it. Not because you're a good king. Not because you deserve it. Because now a few verses, chapters earlier, we all done had Elijah and the fire coming down and all this stuff. I mean, we're not talking about a great king as far as an individual. God knows what He's dealing with. But he says, I'm going to do this for this very reason. Because they said that I cannot fight in a valley. Just because Ben-Hadad and them drunk individuals over there says I can't fight in a valley, I'm going to rip them in the valley. Just to let them know I'm the God of the hills and I'm the God of the valley. I'm the God of everything. And so he delivered them one more time in battle. And Ben-Hadad is running again. This time he is wiping them out. He is destroying as many of them. He is killing them. Ben-Hadad is running for his life. It is a total wipeout. I mean, they're not gathering another army. This fight is over. And Ahab is collecting the spoils and everything is going on. And all of a sudden, they decide to do one thing. His main people decide to dress in old clothes and put ropes on their head and make it look like they're just whipped, just servant mentality. It's like when you go car shopping. You don't ever wear a suit to go car shopping. You always put on an old pair of blue jeans, tore up clothes, and wrinkly up old T-shirt, and you walk in there. How much you want for that thing? Why? Because you want them to think you don't have no money. You walk up in there all clean and nice, I'll be five guys come busting out that door. That's mine. I got that one. You come pulling up in there and just some old ratty looking thing and get out like that and lean up against your car, they'll just kind of walk up there, can I help you? Yeah. They're not dumb. They dress up in ropes and servant mentality and they've got all this going on. And the whole point is so that Ahab will look down on them and feel sorry for them. Now these are the same people that just surrounded his city and was trying to kill him. These are the same people that got drunk because they thought they had already whipped him. These are the same people that are not his friends. They are his enemies. And when they come walking up and just lowly, Ahab, you're so awesome. Look, Ben-Hadad, he's a whipped man. Your servant, Ben-Hadad, lowly Ben-Hadad, he's barely alive. And he's wondering whether you just let him live. And at this moment, you see the heart of Ahab. He has forgotten all that God has done. He has forgotten everything that God... Let me tell you what causes us the beginning of our failure. We sit here this morning and we talk about, well, I'm failing at this and I'm losing at this. And can I tell you where we begin? Our biggest problem is the fact that we forget all it took to get us to this spot right here. We forget all the miracles God had done in our life and all those times we've prayed when we were 15 and 20 and when we were 30 and when we were growing up and when we thought we were dead and when the doctor said it's not good and all those times, and yet here we still stand and here we still sit. Some of us in here have enormous testimonies of how awesome God is. And yet at the same time, we don't think we're going to get through this next little bill or this next little problem or this next little situation or circumstance or skirmish or breakup in our family or problem that we're going through. Can I tell you something? It all begins when we start thinking that we have a strategy or we have a plan or we allow our own selves to try to figure out God. He couldn't figure out God when He defeated the armies. He couldn't figure out God when He had won all those battles. He couldn't figure out God when everything was going right for Him, when it should have went wrong. Then why in the world now does He decide that I know what's best and I know what to do and I know how it's going to turn out? It's Ahab's biggest problem. When it didn't rain for 3.5 years, he forgot. When God called fire down, he forgot. When God did miracle after miracle in front of him, he kept forgetting. Now, here is a battle going on. Here, he can't win. And God delivers him. Yet, once again, Ahab forgets. I want to tell you, somebody who succeeds in life, I'll tell you what their greatest attribute is. Their greatest attribute is this. They spend little to no time thinking about their failure. I have failed in my life hundreds of times. But I spend absolutely no time on them. I learned what I needed to learn at the moment, figured out I'd never do that again, and kept right on going. Some of us in this room, all we do is talk about our failures. As soon as we meet somebody, the first thing that comes out of our mouth, well, you probably heard about me. Well, I don't know if you know or not, but I lost my papaw 22 years ago. Life hadn't been the same since. I don't know if you know that story or not. If we get time to go to lunch, I'll share it with you. Some of us, we are known by our failures. I don't know if you know me or not. I'm not very smart. I'm the dumb one around here. Before long, if you're not careful, we've already spoken our destiny. People who succeed is not because they're smarter. I've done told you I was a D student, so it isn't brains. But I'm not going to walk around and call myself dumb all the time. May not be the smartest, but I'll figure it out. It may take me a little longer than some people. My math may look a little more crooked than some, but I will figure it out. Because I am not going to die on this hill. This is not the hill I was born to die on. It's not the moment in my life. I'm not going to just dig a hole and jump in it right now. Failure begins in our mind when what we do is we forget all that's got us to where we are. It's God that brought us to here. And the same God that brought us to here is still on the throne. And He's still able to keep us going forward. I've got to get through the story. I preached a whole chapter to y'all. Man, can you look at somebody and say, I've never seen Pastor preach a whole chapter that fast. That's as quick as I can tell that story. And I jumped a lot of good stuff. But now I want to get to the sermon. Let's see if we can get through this pretty quickly. Go with me to verse 35. Ahab now has done called his enemy his brother. Ahab now has done put him up in the chariot. Done made a treaty with him. The same man that wants to kill him. That gets God's attention. And God comes to one of the sons of the prophets. If I read all this, it'll take all day, so let me just keep going. He comes to one of the sons of the prophets and he says, I want you to tell Ahab it's not good. Now listen now, there's three names in this chapter that are very important. There is a king, there is a prophet, and there is a servant. You will hear these three titles used all the time. And depending on which one you are is whether or not your life will be successful. Kings don't fare too good in this thing. Prophets just do what prophets do. They just tell the truth. And then there are servants. And servants are the ones who rise. Servants are the ones who are taken care of. Servants are the one whom God shows up and helps. Now, he looks over at his friend, his companion. And I always get troubled at this part of the story. It's kind of an odd part of the story, but it fits it perfectly. Remember now, everything's about a servant. It's whether I can be a servant, whether I can be a servant, whether I can serve God, whether I can be a servant. So let's just say we were companions. Come on, you walking with me. We're walking along. God touches me and says, I want you to do this. Okay. I look over at you and I say, look, take your sword. Take your stick, whatever you got in your hand. Hit me as hard as you can, please. So you would do that. So he didn't even hesitate. Okay. Please. I said, please. Sit down. Find me a good friend. Kenneth's too mature for this problem. I got to get me a young Christian. I can't get me an old Christian. Old Christian, if you said it, I'm going to do it. And this is correct because notice now, this young servant of the prophet, this one that's his buddy, that's his companion. When the prophet looks at him and says, strike me, please strike me right now. Wound me. He looks at his friend and he says, I can't do that to you. I can't hit you. I can't. That would be. Come on now. I'm not going to do that. This part of the story is pretty neat because the prophet loses friendship quick. He turns around to that friend and he says, because you would not strike me, because you would not do what I ask you to do, as you leave here today, you survived the fight, you survived the battle, but on your way home today, you will not survive. A lion will come out and will eat you and kill you today. Huh? It's all about whether I can be a servant. It's all about whether I can be faithful and loyal. And he looks at that friend of his, a companion, somebody he just ate dinner with, somebody he's been hanging out with for a long period of time and says, you will die today. And the prophet keeps walking away from him and finds another man, and he looks at the other man and he says, "Strike me, please. I need you to hit me." This guy doesn't hesitate. I don't know if he just doesn't know him very well, doesn't care, thinks, whatever. He pulls out his sword, his stick, or whatever he's got, and he hits him. And the Bible says it doesn't just strike him, but it wounds him. It causes a fatal, harsh blow into his life. Something about you've got to understand. When you're going to succeed and not fail, you cannot worry about what the details look like or how it's working out or any of those things. You have to decide, I'm going to do it just because God says I got to do it. I'm going to do it just because the Word says I'm supposed to do it. Ahab's problem was first that he would forget, and then secondly, he would not do what he already knew God had commanded him to do. He was supposed to kill Ben-Hadad. He was supposed to wipe him out, but he wouldn't do it. And whenever God runs into people and comes into contact with people, that He's spoken things in your life, but you still won't do it. You still won't react to it. You still won't walk away from it. You still won't quit acting that way or talking that way or watching that or seeing that or speaking that way. Then understand, it's going to draw a bad attention from God. And you will fail. So the servant now is bleeding. This prophet, he covers his head so nobody can see his eyes, and he wraps up in a robe and he stands by the road. And as he stands by the road, he waits for the king to pass by. And as the king passes by, he tells him a story. He says, King, I've got a problem. And the king Ahab, by now, he doesn't... You ever get to those points in your life where you just want somebody to ask you a question because you feel like you've done solved the world's problems? Let me help you. I am wise. I've got it all figured out. This is Ahab. He's got it all figured out. He just shot a 60-something at the golf course. There's no problem in life now he can't handle. He's got a little bit of oat in him. And he stands there, and then the prophet begins to tell the story. He says, King, I was in the battle. He doesn't recognize the prophet because he's covered up. He says, your servant, and I love this. Remember now, your servant was in the battle. In the heat of the battle, you can see how I fought. I've been wounded. I'm a warrior. I was in the battle, and while I was in the battle, another soldier came to me and had this prisoner. He told me, he said, you keep him and do not lose him. Because if you lose him, it'll either be your life or you'll have to pay a certain amount for what you've lost. So I had him. But then as the battle was going on, I got busy doing this and that and some of that and some of this, and I looked up and he was gone. I had lost the prisoner. What should happen to me, a king? The king very boldly, and just, this is a no-brainer. It shall happen just like you just said. You've given your own verdict. You sentenced yourself. You just said that you took responsibility for somebody, and you made a covenant that said that you would either die or you would pay the price. It's a no-brainer. You got to pay up now. Either you're fixing to die or you're fixing to pay the money. One or the other. Prophet throws back the robe, and Ahab sees who it is, and he knows immediately he's in trouble. He's in a world of hurt. I want to show you three areas. We've already covered two. I want to show you three reasons that we use, but they're not real excuses for failure. When we talk about failure, we like to find a reason why we fail. First one could be this. Well, I just didn't know any better. Look at the person beside you and say, are you ignorant? Yeah. Because that's what we try to use sometimes. I'm just ignorant. Now, I didn't say you were not mentally able to learn. I said ignorant. When I call somebody ignorant, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or you can't learn. It just means I don't know. My son is ignorant when it comes to trigonometry. Doesn't mean he can't learn trig. It just means right now if you gave him a trig test, he'd fail. And Ahab would have looked and loved to have said, I just didn't know any better. I'm playing dumb. I'm just going to play dumb and then that'll be my excuse. You ever done that? Sometimes we even lie to try to do that one. We knew better. We look at people and we try to excuse our, I just didn't know. I didn't know. And then we walk away like, oh man. Just let this one die. Because we knew. We knew when we said it. And we knew when we did it. We weren't ignorant. And Ahab was the same way. He couldn't use the excuse that I just didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. Sure you do. Everybody in this room knows enough already. You got here today. That automatically lets me know that you know enough already that you're not ignorant to not be able to follow God or trust God or depend on God. If you say, well, I don't have a Bible, I got plenty of them. All you got to do is ask. I'll give you one. I don't understand it. Then call me. We'll figure it out. If there's something there you just can't, quote, understand, love that excuse. I'm just too dumb to understand the Bible. Oh, it's not complicated. I just told you a Bible story today. How complicated was that? It was pretty simple, wasn't it? Yeah, it's not hard. The hard part is actually wanting to listen and to not have the excuse anymore and to say, I knew better. I knew what I should have done. I cannot play dumb. And Ahab, looking at the prophet, knew, I can't play dumb. It wasn't from a lack of ability. Ahab, secondly, couldn't look at him and say, I wasn't able. What was Benadad's position? Benadad was utterly dead. He was hiding in a cave, and he sent his own men dressed like slaves and servants just to try to spare his life. All that they were trying to do, they weren't trying to say, we were friends, we're brothers, we're this, we didn't want to be in the chariot, we don't want any of those things. All they were asking for was, please let Benadad live. Ahab couldn't look and say, well, he had all these men around him. There was no way I could have got to him. I wasn't able to kill him. I wasn't able to take care of the problem. I wasn't able. None of us can use that excuse either. Can I tell you right now, you're less than 40 feet from an altar. You're less than 40 feet from an altar. I don't care what a problem you got in your life. I don't care what situation you got in your life. I don't care what troubles you got in your life. I don't care what disturbances you have in your life. I could really care less. Why? Because I know that 40 feet away is somebody who's strong enough. His name is Jesus. He's wise enough. His name is Jesus. There is no power that hasn't been given to him. No ability that he doesn't have. You don't have to rest on your own ability to win. Ahab, if anybody should have known it doesn't require great ability, he just won a battle against an army that covered a whole mountain. And he won it with 7,000 men, not because of his ability, but because of God's ability. And he couldn't look at the prophet and say, well, I wasn't able. With God, there's nothing impossible. With God, you can do anything. And every one of us in this room knows that. It's just whether or not we'll throw our lives in that. Some of us want to use the excuse, I just wasn't able. Sure you were. Now don't get me wrong. There's some things you aren't able to do. This world philosophy about ability, I don't like. Look, you can put paintbrushes in my hand. buy me all the colors you want. Buy me boards and stencils. And I won't ever draw like Matt. It won't ever happen. Matt walks into a room. I walk into a room. I'm like trying to draw straight lines. There's some of you, it doesn't matter if I sent you to American Idol and put you with the best judges and the best work. You can't sing. And if I gave you 50 years to work on it and come back, you still wouldn't be able to sing. There's some world philosophies that just don't work. If you just try hard enough, if you just work... No, we're not talking about some ability you don't have. I'm talking about the abilities you do have at your disposal. The Bible says if you need anything, lack anything, ask. You say, Pastor, right now I'm just weak. Ask. Pastor, right now I'm just having a hard time going through what I'm going... Ask. The ability is there. You have not because you ask not. Third, he couldn't say he was lazy. He couldn't use an excuse, I'm just lazy. Ahab just fought. Just won battles. It wasn't laziness that got him there. You know what his downfall was? The story does it beautifully when the prophet tells the story. When that prophet told the story, he said, listen, I had a man come up to me who had... He captured somebody in battle. He told me to keep him. How did he lose the man? How did he lose the valuable thing? The prophet says it best. I had him. And then stuff just started getting my attention. Stuff just started taking my time. You know, I wanted to spend time with God, but by the time I'd done watched The Bachelorette and this and that and everything else and How the World Burns and I'd done watched my favorite videos and American Idol and this and that, and after I'd done gone and eat with my buddies and we spent 3 hours talking about junk at the table, I was too tired to read that night. What tears us apart, what gets us, is the fact that in our lives we have so much of this and that. So many things that we think about, and so many things we worry about, and so many things that we have attached in our lives. So much family, and so many things, and so many friends, and so many ideas, and so many plans. That it is the greatest battle in your life. The greatest battle in your life. To not let this and that be your fall. Let me tell you why some of you will not run 40 feet even though you know there's ability and even though you know there's an answer and even though you know God will be on your side. You know why we don't run? It's because we can't even focus or concentrate enough because there's so much of this. And so much of that. And we got so much that got to get done tomorrow. And before long, we turn around to that important thing. And we wonder why, where did my marriage go? Where did my kids go? You know, I ain't been to church in 3 weeks. What's with that? I don't even go to Sunday school anymore. Shoot, we get to such a point with this and that, here's what we'll do. We'll say, look, church starts at 8:30. Now, pastor won't start preaching until about 9. So I really don't have to be there until about 9. Don't look at the person beside you because they got their head down right now. See, I really don't have to be there at 8:30. I got a little more time. I can do that. One more load of clothes, or I can make sure I get those dishes washed before I leave. I can make sure. And if we walk in at 9, we won't miss anything. Let me tell you a problem. This and that. Some of you got such a burn right now, you got to get out of here because you already got plans. You can't even concentrate on what God wants to do in your life. Look, I got stuff. I got to get out of here by this time. I hope Pastor ain't long today. And you wonder why your life is the way it is. You wonder why miracles don't happen. You wonder why prayers aren't answered. I can tell you why. There's too much, just like Ahab, too much of this and too much of that. Ahab had too much of this in his mind and too much of that going on and too many things going through. He already had treaties in mind and how he's going to be able to set up a snow cone stand in Samaria and be able to sell snow cones and do different things. And he had all these ideas and plans, and he was going to open a shop over here and an antique place over there, and he was going to be able to do this. No taxes. And when Ben-Hadad started saying this, he forgot the main thing. Ben-Hadad, you got to die. I mean, it's all good in that. I appreciate you letting me come to Samaria, but I kind of hate to break it to you. I'm fixing to invade Samaria. I'm going to have every shop in town. I don't need your street. I'm fixing to own the whole place. But because we wrestle with this and that, we give up our Samarias. We give up our futures. We give up our blessings. I struggle with it just like everybody else does. It's been a busy week. A lot of things going on. I got here Saturday and I said, okay, enough of this, enough of that. Kids are out on summer break. That takes up time as it is. Nothing wrong with that. It's just this and that. But I knew you were coming today, whether I was ready or not. I parked my truck behind the bus so nobody would sneak in, want to ask me questions. I love you and all, but I needed some time. No more this and that. Anybody ever get to that point? You just have to take the phone off the hook. You just got to... For just a couple hours, I just needed to just get that in my head. There's no shortage of this and that. There's no shortage of things to do. It wasn't long, the phone rang. The yard needed to be cleaned. Wasn't long, phone rung. Somebody bought a piece of furniture. Need help moving it. Your life will always be full of this and that. This and that. This and that. I'm going to close and I'm going to say it just as simply as I know how. Jesus in His teaching made it as simple as it can ever be said. He said, seek you first the kingdom of God. Make it the main priority of your life. You will have to fight to not let this and that want to steal your energy and your time and everything you got.